Trading Club Update, Week 6. Welcome to this audio issue of Trading Club, published and copyrighted by Porter & Company. All rights reserved. Please note that this recording was generated via AI and may contain minor transcription errors and pronunciation mistakes. Throughout this issue, I may reference charts, graphs, and imagery that can only be viewed on our website at porterandcompanyresearch.com. The value of the Trading Club tracking portfolio settled at $126,914 as of Friday, February 13, up 26.9% since our May 30 launch. See the detailed portfolio snapshot below. We made no trades this week. Note, we used the portfolio prices as of the early morning on Friday due to a last-minute publishing issue, but we'll return to our normal practice of taking the prices at Thursday's close starting next week. In today's issue, we cover the latest quarterly results from the biggest loser in the portfolio and explain why we remain bullish on the business. We also address some recent subscriber questions in the mailbag. Stellar earnings fail to save Cellebrite. From AI apocalypse, it's been an ugly year for shares of digital forensics company Cellebrite DIE, NASDAQ, CLBT, which have dropped 50% over the last 12 months and are down 25% since our October 20th recommendation of the risk reversal options trade. The shares have become swept up in the AI apocalypse, widespread fears that new artificial intelligence, AI, tools will disrupt virtually every software business in existence. Or at least that's what the market is telling us through the recent price behavior. As of February 9th, 100% of software stocks in the S&P 500 were down at least 20% from their 52-week high, and almost 80% have fallen more than 30%. Outside of bear markets, that's the highest reading on record. So that's the context of Cellebrite's 25% decline. But if we ignore the short-term share price for a moment and simply analyze the company's financial reports, the business is telling an entirely different story. This includes the latest Q4 results released on Wednesday. Revenue, earnings, and management's outlook for 2026 all exceeded estimates. Q4 sales increased 18% year-over-year, YoY, to $128.8 million, beating analyst estimates of $125.9 million, while earnings per share, EPS, of 14 cents beat estimates of 11 cents. For the full year, the company grew revenue 19% to $476 million, or just 1% shy of its long-term guidance for 20% annual revenue growth, an impressive result considering the budget constraints Cellebrite faced from its key customers in the U.S. federal government last year. It started with Elon Musk's Department of Government Efficiency, DOGE, budget cuts early in the year, followed by the longest government shutdown in history in Q4. The fears of a major hit to Cellebrite's government contract sparked the company's initial share price decline beginning last January. But it turned out that Cellebrite's mission-critical products are simply too entrenched in law enforcement workflows to fall onto the chopping block. In fact, not only did customers not cancel contracts, but they spent more money on additional Cellebrite products throughout the year, as evidenced in the company's 116% dollar retention rate. Meanwhile, margins remained stellar, with the company generating $160 million in free cash flow last year, or a 34% margin, handily exceeding the company's long-term guidance of 30% free cash flow margins. Looking ahead, with the threat of federal budget cuts behind them, management expects the company to generate $568 million in revenue for 2026. This forecast was better than the consensus of $555 million going into the Q4 report, and reflects another year of 19% revenue growth. Cellebrite CEO Tom Hogan noted that the 2026 outlook was a conservative estimate that likely doesn't include several key catalysts for accelerating growth this year. One catalyst is an acceleration in federal contracts now that government agencies are no longer constrained by the fizzled DOGE effort and the government shutdown, which contributed to 4 percentage points of slower than expected growth last year. But the biggest catalyst could come from an acceleration in sales for Cellebrite's Guardian product, a cloud-based digital evidence management system. This collaborative software platform aims to unlock significant cost and time savings for law enforcement agencies by replacing their legacy processes of manually sharing evidence on physical devices like USB drives or DVDs with a cloud-based digital alternative. For the past 18 months, Guardian sales have been in a holding pattern. Federal agencies were interested but could not legally buy it without a critical certification from the Federal Risk and Authorization Management Program, FedRAMP. This is a mandatory security framework that any cloud-based software provider must clear before it can legally be sold to the U.S. federal government. During the Q4 earnings call, management noted that it expects to receive FedRAMP approval before the end of Q1. Gaining FedRAMP clearance will reinforce one of the many moats around Cellebrite's business as a trusted, secure software provider for law enforcement. This is an expensive, time-consuming process, often taking 18 to 24 months, that involves rigorous technical specifications to ensure utmost security from hackers and other exploits, and successfully navigating the authorization is just one of the many reasons why Cellebrite falls squarely into the undisruptible software category. The sellers of Cellebrite shares fail to appreciate that this is a business unlike virtually any other software stock in the market. The data running through its platform comes from physical devices, like iPhones, that are locked behind the most sophisticated encryption protocols. Cellebrite has developed proprietary hardware to access this data, and its full-time staff of technical experts work at the bleeding edge of technology to crack into the new digital devices coming to market each year. Nothing about this process is vulnerable to AI disruption. An upstart competitor would need a full team of human engineers, and many years of development, just to have any hope of catching up with Cellebrite's product suite, and they'd still be playing from behind trying to earn the decades of trust Cellebrite has established within the global legal system and the US federal government. This not only makes the business hard to kill, but it also makes for incredibly sticky customer relationships. And this captive customer base provides Cellebrite with a virtually endless runway to continue selling more products and features over time. That's why the business has proven immune from virtually any competitive threat or even macroeconomic shocks like the COVID-19 pandemic. One look at its revenue trajectory tells the story of a business that shows no sign of disruption anywhere in sight. Since CLBT shares peaked at $25 this time last year, the company's enterprise value has fallen from $5 billion to $2.7 billion. Meanwhile, the business has continued growing at nearly 20% per year while churning out free cash flow margins in excess of 30%. The only thing that's changed is the valuation multiple, which has collapsed from 31x to 15x free cash flow. For some perspective, that's a more than 50% discount relative to the S&P 500's 37x free cash flow multiple. And yet it's growing nearly twice as fast with margins more than twice as high as the average S&P 500 constituent. When a fear frenzy hits and investors sell en masse, without a second thought given to business fundamentals or valuations, there's no telling how far the move will go. So while we view a 15x free cash flow multiple as a great value for a business of Cellebrite's quality, there's no reason why the valuation can't drop further if sellers continue outnumbering the buyers. And if investors are going to make that mistake, we want to be in a position to fully capitalize. That means waiting patiently for as long as the AI disruption fears are running rampant, until the valuation falls to a no-brainer bargain price. In our view, that's somewhere around 12x free cash flow, or about $11 per share. If that opportunity presents itself, we plan to aggressively add to our existing position. Portfolio overview. The table below shows all current holdings as of the close of trading on Friday, February 13th. Note that we have added prices for our current buy/sell recommendations in the updated table below. A few notes on how to read and interpret this portfolio table. Please pay special attention to the action column, where we specify whether each trade is a buy or sell to open transaction. Next, the position size for each trade is equal to the current value of the position, with the exception of the cash secured puts. In the case of the cash secured puts, we define the position size as the total value of our future commitment to purchase 100 shares for each contract. This number is calculated as follows. Position size equals number of contracts x 100x put strike price. We use this number because it accurately reflects our total capital commitment, and thus our total risk exposure on the trade. For example, in the case of the Celsius, NASDAQ, sell, $40 put, the position size equals 1 by 100x $40 equals $4,000. We use this number because it accurately reflects our total capital commitment, and thus our total risk exposure on the trade. To see the current profit/loss across each open position and other details, please see the live snapshot of our tracking portfolio at the end of this update. Next, the links below will take you to each of the original recommendations in the current portfolio, including the 5 call contracts in shares of British American Tobacco, NYSE, BTI, which we covered in our inaugural trade series, here, and in a video recorded on May 30th, which can be found here, the June 2nd Triple Flag Precious Metals, NYSE, TFPM. Recommendation can be found here, the October 30th recommendation of the Invesco QQQ Trust, NASDAQ QQQ, put option can be found here, the July 24th recommendation of Philip Morris International, NYSE, PM, trades can be found here, the August 21st recommendation of Chipotle Mexican Grill, NYSE, CMG, can be found here, the September 2nd recommendation of the iShares Silver Trust ETF, NYSE, SLV, can be found here. The September 18th recommendation of PayPal, NASDAQ, PIPL, can be found here. The September 24th recommendation of the Cellebrite, NASDAQ, CLBT, risk reversal options trade can be found here. The December 19th recommendation of Nike, NYSE, NKE, can be found here. The January 9th recommendation of the Invesco QQQ Trust, NASDAQ, QQQ, put option can be found here. The January 13th recommendation of LandBridge, NYSE, Pound, and WaterBridge Infrastructure, NYSE, WBI, can be found here. The January 21st recommendation of EQT, NYSE, EQT, Calls and WaterBridge Infrastructure, NYSE, WBI, cash secured puts can be found here. The February 4th recommendation of LandBridge NYSE, Pound, cash secured puts can be found here. Plus, the following trades published on Thursday, December 4th, can be found here. They are the purchase of 100 shares of Celsius, NASDAQ, sell, and the sale of one sell $40 cash secured put, expiring March 20th, 26, the purchase of 100 shares of Booz Allen Hamilton, NYSE, BAH, and the sale of one BAH $100 covered call, expiring March 20, 2026, the sale of one Philip Morris International, NYSE, PM, $175 covered call, expiring March 20, 2026, the sale of two Viper Energy, NASDAQ, Venom, $40 cash secured puts, expiring March 20, 26, the sale of one Chipotle Mexican Grill, NYSE, CMG, $32.50 cash secured put, expiring March 20, 2026, the sale of 7 Kenvue, NYSE, Cavu, $17 cash secured puts, expiring March 20, 2026. Next, we'll address a number of subscriber questions in the mailbag. Mailbag, please note that nothing we write should ever be considered individual investment advice, as we are not licensed to provide such guidance. This material is for educational purposes only, and we recommend consulting with a licensed financial advisor for individual investment advice. The first question comes from the Trading Club Forum regarding our covered call strategy. I am interested in the overall thought process of a covered call. If we have a covered call and the price of the underlying stock continues to go higher above the covered call strike price, does it make sense to buy to close the call before the underlying continues higher? Or does it make more sense to just let the underlying stock go at covered call strike price when it expires, thereby losing possible gain from underlying? RPM choice comes to mind. Is there an underlying strategy here? Ross response, in my view, it's generally not a good strategy to buy back a covered call after the stock moves above the strike price. In the case of our Philip Morris International, NYSE, PM, covered call, we would be taking a loss of around $1,500 by executing that strategy. With a covered call, we're making a trade-off between sacrificing future upside in order to bring steady, guaranteed income into the portfolio. Sometimes those calls will look suboptimal on any single trade, like in our Philip Morris example, when the stock moves significantly above the strike price and we miss out on that additional upside. But we know that the vast majority of options expire worthless over time, which makes selling options selling a profitable approach over the course of many trades. So for example, in our current portfolio we have one stock that's traded well above the call option strike price, Philip Morris, as you mentioned. But at the same time, we have five other covered calls where the option prices are currently trending towards zero. This includes our covered calls on Celsius, CELH, Chipotle Mexican Grill, CMG, Booz Allen Hamilton, BAH, Nike, NKE, and Triple Flag Precious Metals, TFPM. The trick is to avoid thinking in terms of individual trades, and view the strategy holistically, across the portfolio. Over the course of many trades, the steady income from a systematic call selling strategy is designed to reduce our overall risk and smooth out the returns. We are willing to make this trade-off for the benefits it generates across the entire portfolio, even acknowledging that it comes at the cost of surrendering upside on any individual trade. Meanwhile, we always retain a significant number of positions in the portfolio that have unlimited upside. Across all of these different strategies, we're trying to achieve a balance. We're aiming for a diversified portfolio that has a collection of offsetting, uncorrelated positions. The math says that this combination of uncorrelated positions is the most straightforward pathway toward higher compounded returns over time. To gain a better sense of how covered calls work in the context of achieving this balanced portfolio strategy, I suggest reviewing this article where we describe how it all works in greater detail. Next up is a two-part question. First, let me say I am a big fan of the Trading Club service. And while I am not managing to keep up with the total return you are getting in the portfolio, for reasons I will discuss below, I am still doing very nicely and learning along the way. So thank you. I do have two questions I hope you can respond to. As mentioned above, I am not keeping up with the level of return you are. I see the reasons as first, there are a few, not many, trades I chose not to make. One of those worked out to my advantage and a couple more to my detriment. And second, you almost always get a better fill on your trades than I do. As a result, I am currently running about $4,000 behind your total account value. And due to the magic of compounding, this gap is likely to grow even larger, and I will find myself in a position where I cannot make all the trades you do even if I want to, especially since you make round lot trades so you can use options in conjunction with the trades. For now, I can simply add another $4,000 to my account to get me back to where you are now. However, I may not be able to add the future sums necessary to keep up with you. I cannot believe I am the only trading club member in this position. I like to print out that table that shows all of the current holdings you send out as part of the weekly update. I like to sit in my easy chair and fully digest it, but the table never prints correctly. I only get the first part of the table until it reaches the bottom of the page and then the rest just vanishes. Anything you can do to fix that? Ross responds, regarding your first question, it would be interesting to know which portion of the return disparity comes from missing trades versus the difference in trade execution. I can only speculate without knowing the full details, but my suspicion is that missing trades is the far larger culprit. We've had several outsized winners that have driven the majority of our returns to date, including our iShares Silver ETF, SLV, and British American Tobacco, BTI, trades. Missing even one of these triple-digit returns could have a significant influence on your returns versus those of our tracking portfolio. And if the goal is to follow our approach, then simply following each trade we make should solve this portion of the return disparity. As far as trade executions, I expect that this will only result in modest variations in returns. Based on the randomness of daily price fluctuations, this should result in your achieving slightly better or worse executions over time. And over the long run, we expect that it will all come out in the wash. However, we have recently introduced a new process that should give subscribers a more clear view of exactly when we transact and at what prices. That is, we are now publishing each trade execution in the Trading Club forum, including our most recent trade on Landbridge, Pound, cash secured puts. That said, I'm very interested to hear feedback from others who are following our trades to see what results they've had to date. So I will put out the call for any subscribers who would like to write in and let us know what kind of returns they have achieved and how they compare to our results. Feel free to send your comments to mailbag@portroncompanyresearch.com. We'd love to hear from you. Regarding your second question on printing the portfolio table, I've reached out to our production team. The inherent challenge is the sheer size of the document, which will cause it to run onto multiple pages, and that may be causing the cutoff issue you mention. However, one recommendation is to click on the table itself and open it in a new window, and then try printing out the table as a separate document. That should allow you to print the full table, even if it runs onto multiple pages. If you have any questions or feedback, the Trading Club forum is the best chance to get a quick response from our team. If you haven't yet checked it out, click here to gain access and join the conversation. Alternatively, you can always email us at mailbag@porterandcompanyresearch.com. Good investing, Ross Hendricks, Porter & Company. Click on the portfolio to enlarge and view it in a new window. Thank you for being a paid subscriber to Porter & Company. We hoped you enjoyed this audio issue. In addition to this issue, you should check out our top 3 best buys where we highlight 3 current portfolio picks that are at an attractive buy point today. You can find the top 3 best buys under the Best Buys link on our site at porterandcompanyresearch.com.